And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Ultimately, I'm going to keep saying it. Get 1% better every day. Just get a little bit better every day.
Hey, welcome back. Stephen Holder here with Zach Kiefer. We are here for another edition of 1% Better. It is the morning after. Morning after the NFL draft. And, you know, this is always a time when we think we have all the answers. Everybody knows everything. When in reality, we won't know anything really for like 3 years. But that's never stopped us before. So let's jump into it. The Indianapolis Colts, they got 8 new players over the weekend, over the last couple of days. They have, I think, done some good things to bolster what they have. They think they're a competitive team in 2022. Time will tell. But I think, Zach, this was a draft that I think, first of all, what I would say is they hit all the boxes. And we'll see if they got the right guys, right? But they hit all their boxes here. Was there any pick in this draft for you that you saw as a surprise?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I had to fill out our sort of draft recap last night, and that was one of the questions was, what was the biggest surprise? And I honestly didn't have one.
I know.
I went with Nick Cross out of Maryland simply because they traded up, which is something they hardly ever do, but it's not an indictment on the safety position or the pick. I think Nick Cross is going to be a fun guy to watch in camp, that deep, fast safety that can close and has range, and we'll get into some of the players in a minute, but we should couch this by saying we don't know anything right now. We won't know anything. I always say 3 years. I think 3 years is a fair judge of – I mean, a couple of years ago we were sitting here saying they found a cornerback in Rocky Sin and they found a pass rusher in Ben Banigou. Neither of those really worked out for the long term. So that's a little bit of a sobering thought on a day where every team thinks they crushed the draft. But I will add on to your point and say this. If they hit on these guys – if they hit on these guys, they hit on the right positions and they hit on guys with really high ceilings. And the one thing we've talked about a lot over the weekend is they bet on athletic traits this weekend. They got bigger, they got faster, they got stronger. They went out and found some dudes. Now, if they can play remains to be seen in the NFL, but if they hit, they got better at wide receiver. They added two tight ends, two huge tight ends, two basically like Mo Alley Cox in the mold type of guys. And I think the best move of all, was trading back 11 spots Friday night. You move back to 53. You still get an impact wide receiver in Alec Pierce. But to supplement that, you add a third round pick and you get it on Raymond, the Central Michigan tackle, who could be your long-term solution at left tackle. That is a huge deal. That's a huge deal. This team really struggled last year finding a replacement for Anthony Costanzo. And if they were able to hit on Pierce and Raymond, for me, that's the biggest takeaway. Those are huge spots to fill in the offense.
Right. So, and I think that trade actually, I think that's part of the predictable nature of this draft, I think, for the Colts. I mean, they did exactly what I thought they might do. You know, we talked so much and we hit on this on last week's episode. We have talked so much about what they said prior to the draft. Oh, we love our receivers. Oh, you know, the offensive line is going to be fine. Oh, you know, look, we have a lot of guys in the tight end room. We'll maybe add something, but we like those guys.
Actions over words, right?
Yeah, right? We told you this over and over and over. And it's not I told you so. It's just a reminder, like, this is how this works. This is what is important. And I think this is typical of the Colts. They generally do not overcomplicate the draft, which I think is kind of nice because sometimes you can outsmart yourself in the draft. They do things that on the surface make a lot of sense. Everything they did made sense to me. I don't find myself with any picks where I went like, huh, I didn't think they would do that. You know, like I just didn't ever find myself saying that in this draft. And I don't, you know, again, whether they got the right guys remains to be seen. But their motivations for making these moves, I get it, right? I mean, wide receiver right out of the box, right? We expected that. I think the second pick for me was always going to be tricky. Was it going to be the tight end? I was thinking offensive line, but they went tight end, which is interchangeable with receiver, right? So a pass catcher, another pass catcher. And then they went offensive tackle. But I think the trade back, as you mentioned, I want to emphasize that. That is part of what they do. This is the fifth time in, I think, 6 years or fourth time in 5 years that they have executed some kind of trade back in the draft. Some of those happened before the draft. Some happened during the draft. But they have consistently looked for opportunities, or at least listened to opportunities, to move down and gather more picks. The question then becomes, what the hell do you do with those picks? And I think they have to feel really good about getting Raymond. There's no question. Like, that, what if they don't do that? Then he's probably not here. Or they have to give up the tight end pick and their second selection, right? So I just think to be able to get that, to get that done and still get what you want. Look, I'm not saying Chris Ballard is the smartest guy in the room, but I mean, you have to give him some credit. He definitely, I think, is prepared for these scenarios, because that's the thing. I mean, these opportunities come, these opportunities to trade down come, and the question is always, okay, if we do this, where are we in terms of our board and what can we get? And you have to have those answers like bang, bang, bang. There's no opportunity to say, hey, we'll call you back in 5 minutes. No, you got to figure this out like on the fly.
Right.
And to be able to do that is tough. That's where teams screw this up. That is where they screw it up, because they maybe make a hasty decision, make the trade, and then somebody jumps in front of them and takes what they want. I thought that Chris Ballard made a good point last night. I think it was to your question. Great question. What has he learned about the draft that he didn't know when he took this job? And one of the things that he said there that I think just kind of slid under the radar is, I have a better idea of what other teams are going to do and what other teams want. That is critical when you're talking about moving around, because you have to anticipate. So anyway, I just thought that was just a really interesting observation.
So Thursday night, we sat there and there was no first round pick, and they didn't make a move to get in the first round. But it was,
you sat there. I was smart enough not to come. But go ahead.
Right, right. I was there a lot this weekend. Let's just put it that way. But I got word at some point Thursday night that this team wanted a couple more picks, or at least one more pick in the top 120. And at that point, they only had two. Remember, they only had 42 and 73, and then they didn't pick until the fifth round. And you look at it, the numbers right now, and they picked at 53, 73, 77, and 96. That's a lot of picks in the top 100, and that's the sweet spot of the draft as far as the Colts were concerned. This was another thing Ballard said yesterday, was they really fought. The strength of the draft was late second, early third. Look at where all their picks were, right? They traded back out of 42. That was mid to early first. And they really loaded up late second and then third round. And these guys are players. I mean, third round picks are really important. The fact that they had three of them is a big deal. I feel like that's a really big deal for this team. We know what Ballard's done in the second round. This year, tight end, offensive tackle, safety in the third round, all guys who could step in and play as rookies. I was a little hesitant. We asked Mike DeReese last night, the Northeast area scout, like, is Nick Cross going to be able to compete at safety early on? And he says it's not going to take him very long. This is a fast kid, played at Maryland, can close, really feels like a perfect fit for Gus Bradley's scheme. But my big takeaway, the top four picks is what they did that Friday night. They moved up, they moved back. But they really tried to get a lot of picks in that sweet spot, that late second round, early third round, where that's where you got to get starters, right? Like, these guys need to come in and play and be starters. The rest of the list, Eric Johnson, Ogletree, Curtis Brooks, Rodney Thomas, those guys, you're taking gambles, you're taking risks late in the draft. They might hit, they might not. You can't miss on those early picks. They found the sweet spot. They identified it. And it goes back to what you just said about Ballard. He said, I'm more patient. I don't freak out when big things happen. Lord knows he's had a lot of crazy stuff happen since he took over. But secondly, he has a really good read for what other teams are going to do and where he can move in the draft and still get his guy. I mean, I thought Pierce was a perfect example. Why not just take him at 42? Because you can add a third rounder and still get him at 53. Do you feel like there were any reaches in this list?
You know, I don't feel that way right now. I really don't. Now, I think a reach is a sort of nebulous term. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
What is a reach, right? I mean, I think it sometimes is defined in the eyes of the beholder, you know, who's making the assessment. In this case, it's me. You know, if you want to talk about a reach, I guess maybe an argument might be, you know, a guy like, I don't even know. I mean, I was going
to
say.
It's hard. It's
I was
going to
say
come up
Cross,
with one.
But like, I mean, that's a Big Ten player who had production last year.
They
He's
thought
elite
they,
traits.
This was interesting, I thought. You know? Ballard asked the room late Friday night. He said, if this kid came out next year, where would he go? Because he's young. He's 20, going to be 21 by camp. If right. he comes out next year, where does he go in the draft? And they all told him second round. They said, let's just go get him in the third right now.
And by the way, second round is really high for a safety. I don't know where the first safety was taken this year. I can't remember off the top of my head.
It would have been Hamilton, who went to the Ravens at right. 12, I want to say.
But like outside of him, player. Yeah, outside of him, I don't know that there were any safeties taken particularly high, because they generally are not. So second round projection a year from now for a safety, that's incredibly high. And of course, that's very, very like subjective, right? Talking about the 2023 draft. But I think it's a great point. It's a great, great point.
Right.
So anyway, no, I don't see any reaches. I really don't. In fact, I would argue this. I would argue that they got a few guys on day three who I felt like, man, how's that guy still on the board? And Curtis Brooks is number one on that list. Curtis Brooks out of Cincinnati.
He's interesting.
I'm telling you, I don't know how this is going to work out, but I love this pick. Curtis Brooks out of Cincinnati, 6'2", 287. You know, I think when you talk about a three tech, that maybe doesn't light your world on fire. You'd probably like him to be a little taller and maybe a little heavier, but not the Colts. They think that works. I mean, they want a guy particularly in the scheme they're going to play this year. They want guys who can get up the field and get off the football and attack. And that's one thing that he can do. 7.5 sacks last year at Cincinnati, played a pretty decent schedule, had really good competition, and was one of the best teams in the country. He had 12.5, I believe, tackles for loss as well. So this is a guy who's in the backfield. And now he didn't have that kind of production prior to 2021, but we'll see. I mean, if he can keep that going, he doesn't have to be DeForest Buckner. He just has to be a rotational guy who can create some pass rush in there, maybe be a nickel rusher on third down from time to time. I don't know. We'll see if he even makes the team. But I think his chances are pretty good. Like, this is a good fit.
There's something to that kid.
I mean, like
he was
that
like,
pick.
I'm going to remember the teams that did not pick me. I mean, yeah. And we had Alec Pearson yesterday, who was a teammate of him at college, and he said, look, Curtis Brooks, one of the most underrated players on our team last year. And that's a team that made the Final Four, the college football playoff. And he was in the backfield, like you said, and probably fell a little bit because of his weight. And he said that. I mean, he's not 300 pounds. And if you're going to play on the line, especially interior in this league, a lot of teams want you at that level. The Colts aren't as obsessed as some teams with that weight because, like you said, they like to move up the field, get after the quarterback, and they're going to do more of that with Nate Oley. But there's some fire to this kid, and he's going to be fun to watch in camp. He said he was going to come in angry. We felt that on the Zoom call yesterday with Curtis Brooks. So he's going to be fun to watch. And the other guy that's going to be really fun to watch, and it's going to take some time, is Andrew Ogletree, a tight end out of Youngstown State, a former receiver who literally just came out yesterday and said, I'm a ball of clay. You watch the tape. I see Mo Alie-Cox. But that could be a developmental guy. And I think, and this is something I want to get your thoughts on, we both kind of talked about this yesterday, the position groups that they addressed in the draft, I think it's becoming clear how they think about them. You know, Frank had said all offseason, I like our tight ends. I love Mo. We think Granson can do more. Well, they went big at tight end in this draft. And these guys are going to come in and they're going to compete. And Jelani Woods was the third round pick. What did it tell you about what they think about the offense specifically? Because it's going to look different with these guys over the next couple of years.
Well, I think at tight end, it tells me, look, we can quibble about how they may assess someone like, you know, Kyler Granson, for example, but they drafted two huge tight ends who look a lot like huge. The other guy, Mo'Ali Cox, as you said. So I think if nothing else, and this is something I like about this draft generally, I think if nothing else, if you're Kylan Granson, you know, who was a fourth round pick last year, I believe, this should get your attention. This should get your attention. And
they want that.
Yes, I think that is deliberate. Not just for him. I'm not singling him out. But I think there's a few guys who probably woke up this morning like, I better get my shit together. You know, and I think he's one of them. I think you would include Kari Willis in that group. They took a safety in the third round who they
traded up
in particular. And I think that is a good example. The last guy they really traded up a long way for in that range of the draft, there's a couple of them, but one that comes to mind is Grover Stewart. And you see what kind of traits he had and what kind of player he has turned into. So I'm not comparing their potential outcomes there, but I'm saying similar motivation, right, between those two players and in the range of the draft in which they were chosen. So that's interesting to me. I think Kari Willis is coming off his roughest year of his 3 years, frankly. So he
and Jelani Woods is going to be fun. He's 6'7", for God's sakes. He's bigger. He's taller than Mo, which is crazy to think about. And his story is wild. Just a real quick summary. I mean, he was a quarterback coming out, and I think he beat Davis Mills in a big game in high school. Davis Mills is the starter in Houston as of right now, which is crazy. But Woods started at Oklahoma State, and they threw him in at tight end 1 week just to be the Mark Andrews guy, like the scouting version of Mark Andrews, who torched the Colts in Baltimore last year. And Woods was like, yeah, man, I caught like 8 balls every day for 100 yards. They just couldn't stop me. And the coaches were like, you're going to play tight end now because no one can stop you. So, you know, ended up at Virginia his last year and really became more of a factor in the passing game that season. 8 touchdowns and I think in 11 games last year. He'll probably take some time at this level. You know, DeReese said he's a willing blocker. It doesn't always look pretty, but he's got some tools to work with. He's an enormous human. Like we've said, they drafted these traits. But he's going to be fun. There's going to be like Mo'Ali Cox, and then like Mo Jr. and Mo the third right now in the tight end room. I should reach out to Jack Doyle and be like, dude, they went out and replaced you guys with like Mo Juniors. And then there's Granson, like you said, and like Granson's got to go earn it, but that's going to be a much more fun tight end group right now than it was like 4 days ago. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah. And I think the other area that they really intensified competition to complete the point is offensive tackle with Raymond. There's no question about it. I mean, we've all been asking, what's the plan at left tackle? They have Matt Pryor out there. They think he's a starting caliber player, but has he ever been a full-time starter at left tackle? No. So I don't know if Raymond can be one, but certainly they're going to find out, and they think he has the tools to do it. They're not necessarily pegging him as the starter there. He's got to earn it. He's got to demonstrate he can do it. But that definitely got more competitive. So
don't you think that's perfect?
Yeah.
Because they don't have to start Raymond. They don't have to have the pressure on him right away.
Yes.
He's only played like 20 games at offensive line. He was a tight end. But don't you think it's perfect that they have Pryor and they have Raymond, and Raymond doesn't have to be the starter right away? If he wins the job, he wins the job. But they're not going to throw him out there into the fire at a really, really tough position where if you fail, it's tough. And that mental toll can be pretty serious. So I think that's actually perfect that they've got Pryor in place. They know he can start for however many games they need, but Raymond is really going to be the future there. I think that's perfect because you don't have to just throw him in and expect him to deliver right away, because that's a really tough position to do that at.
Yeah, and to be honest, let's just call it what it is. I mean, you are not finding a bona fide day one starter at left tackle with the resources that the Colts had in this draft. Okay, that was not going to happen. So they got, I think, the next best thing, which is how I phrased it in my story, which is a guy who could potentially be that in the long term. And that, even that's hard finding sometimes. So if they have that, that's a success, frankly. Now, let's just sort of drill down, I think, on the most important pick, I think, in this draft. And this won't come as a surprise. But look, Alec Pierce out of Cincinnati, the 53rd overall pick. They had the 42nd pick, as you said. They trade down. They still get, I think, a guy who is exactly what they want. They were able to trade down and still not sacrifice on the size or the speed that they were looking for from that position, which I think is such a win for the Colts, because sometimes you trade down and now you're getting a little bit less of a product of what you actually wanted, you know? And they didn't have to sacrifice that, which I think is such a big point to make. They got a guy here who is 4'4 in the 40 at 6'3. Is he 6'4? I think he's 6'3. Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about a guy who was going to pair with Michael Pittman on the other side, who is 6'4 and 220 in his own right. Think about what that sort of looks like in a defensive meeting room for the other team, right? If he gets going, right? If he kind of proves that he's ready to play right away and he kind of gets his legs going and he proves that he can be a factor, think about what that means for the opponent. If you're defending this team, you got 6'4 guy on the one side, 6'3 guy on the other side with speed, and you got a really accurate quarterback in Matt Ryan. I think that's trouble for the other team. That's what they thought about.
That's why I love talking to the scouts. Chad Henry came in yesterday and said, we literally talked about that. We thought about Michael Pittman on one end, and we thought about Alec Pierce on the other. And it's a scary thought. I mean, we gotta see it. Pierce has got to go earn it in camp, but he's a competitive dude, and I kind of got that feel yesterday when he came in and talked to us. Like, someone talked about jump balls, and he's like, let's go get it. Yeah. And you can see the former volleyball, former basketball player in him. And Chad Henry was like, look, we think it's a really interesting tandem. He's a pro wrestling guy. And he's like, look, I call him above the rim. Take it up strong. Like, they've already started to think of what these guys can do. And I thought, you know, maybe Pierce goes into the inside a little bit, plays a little slot. And Frank Reich was like, nah, I like him on the outside. Use his height, use his vertical speed. And the one thing that jumps out about the Colts the last couple of years, they love guys who can go win jump balls. Pittman was a stud at that in college. That has translated very well to the pros. And I see that in Pierce's film, and that's going to be fun. Do you think this guy could climb all the way to wide receiver 2 by the middle of next season? I mean, you talk about positions that got a heads up this weekend. Like, we want to get better. You talked about safety and tight end. This one, we've talked about this a lot over the last couple of months, but behind Michael Pittman, it's open season as far as the Colts are concerned. And Henry made it very clear that they think Pierce can come in and play and contribute right away. Where does that leave Paris Campbell and the rest of them?
Well, first of all, I think they're all going to get opportunities because Frank Reich's the coach. And, you know, his philosophy is to use everybody and to rotate receivers and to not let the defense get in a situation where things are predictable for them. So I think everybody gets an opportunity. However, that being said, if you have some matchups, then you're an idiot if you don't sort of exploit those matchups. I think there are going to be opportunities. There'll be games where Pierce is going to be a tough matchup for teams just because of his size. And think about it, it's not just his size, but it's also his speed. So it's not like, you know, he's kind of a slender guy. So like you could theoretically say, all right, we're going to go attack him and be physical and beat him up, right? And there's a lot of merit to that approach. And I think that would have some effect on him, because I don't know if he's ready for that yet, because a lot of college receivers are not. Here's the thing, though. You better be successful, because if he gets on top of you, now you got trouble. You know, it's not like every corner out there is running 4-3. And if he gets a step on a guy, you're probably not going to catch him. And now you're playing from behind, trying to and hoping for an underthrown ball or whatever it might be. So, or hoping your safety is going to save your ass. So, right. I think that they have something here. And to your point, you know, or to your question, I should say, you know, could he be the guy there at wide receiver 2? I think at times he could be, because I think that matchup ability that he has, I think that is going to make him very, very unique. And that's something that they can't replicate with other guys. Now, they do have other guys with size, but I don't think they're quite as polished as he is coming out of college. They certainly were not. I don't think you could have said that about Desmond Patman. You certainly couldn't say that about Michael Strawn. Now, they have some NFL experience, whereas he does not. So maybe they have an edge. But this guy has tools, man. And I think that is going to be something that if you're a smart coaching staff, and I think they have one, you should be able to exploit that. So I do think that it's interesting. There were lots of choices at wide receiver. And I know that you and I had both talked about Christian Watson. He went certainly early in the second round. They didn't have a chance at him. I think this guy is pretty much in the Christian Watson mold, though, right? I mean, what are your thoughts that way? I think if you liked Christian Watson, I think you have to like this guy, don't you?
Yeah. And the comp they gave, the comp the Colts talked about a couple of times is Jordy Nelson.
Yeah.
If they get Jordy Nelson, they're freaking thrilled. We'll hit the brakes a little bit. He's got a ways to go. But, you know, I like Sky Moore, too, because I think Sky Moore does a little bit different than what the Colts have had the last couple of years. They certainly have a type at wide receiver, and I understand the logic. Chris Ballard explained it again on Friday night, and he said, look, they get open. I mean, they make it easier on your quarterback, and I totally get that. And the other thing is Frank Reich is really good at getting his guys open. There's timing, there's schemes, there's crossers. I mean, think about all the catches Mo Alie-Cox had and Jack Doyle had in 2020 with Phillip Rivers. Like, they were open a lot. Like, in that Buffalo game, Jack Doyle was wide open for, like, half the game. I think we'll see more of that this year with Matt Ryan, and Frank will scheme those guys up. And, look, it's going to be fun. Pierce is going to be fun to watch. I'm excited. It would have been a huge bust of a draft, in my opinion, if they didn't get a receiver early. They needed to go aggressively and get a big-time receiver who can add some punch to that room. And it was funny, Bob Kravitz, our colleague, the first question last night, we got in there, Chris Ballard sits down, and Bob says, so Reggie Wayne's here 10 minutes as a coach, and he gets whatever he wants. And Chris said, yeah, man, that's exactly how it works. So it was a lighthearted moment, but, you know, this is going to be fun to watch Alec Pierce work with Reggie Wayne, and that's a young group. Do not forget how young that receiving room is. I mean, these guys are 25 and under, and Alec Pierce is joining the group. There's no veteran right now. Unless they add T.Y. Hilton, we'll see how that goes. But I'm not sure he comes back at this point. I'm not sure. We'll see. But it's going to be a young group. It's going to be a challenge for Reggie to get these guys on the same page. But they need to be better across the board this season. And I think Matt Ryan's a happy dude because he's got two big tight ends and a receiver that have joined the team in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned T.Y. Hilton because I was going to bring that up. I got to tell you, I lean towards saying they're moving on. That's where I'm at. And it's not
I'm
it's
on
not
the a, same page, and it's not a fun thing to say.
It's not a slight to T.Y. And I think I also understand the need for, you know, some veteran presence. Like, I think that's a real thing, and I respect that. But if you can get past that, and I think Reggie Wayne is a good presence to have in that room just because I think the credibility that he will bring, I think, helps them that way. But if you can get past the idea of not having a sort of veteran presence, if you can, I don't see another really overwhelming reason to go back to T.Y. Hilton. It's not that I don't think he can help them. It's just that I don't think he gives them something they don't have already. Or at least I think the other guys bring qualities that are equally important. T.Y. Hilton's going to bring really precise route running. He's going to bring really some clutch playmaking. I think particularly on third down, he shows that, you know, if you put the ball where it needs to be, he's going to come down with it. He's going to fight for that ball. But look, at the end of the day, he doesn't have the speed that he once did. So it's not as though you have that quality. Here in Pierce, you do have top-level speed. You have certainly size with the rest of those guys. I'm not banking on Paris Campbell. I get it. I'm not. But look, I mean, if he's out there, think about this. He did make it, what, to week six or so last year? If he's out there at all, and I know that sounds ridiculous, but if he's out there at all and Pierce shows that he's half decent, Michael Pittman's not coming off the field as it is. I don't know. Where does T.Y. Hilton play? Is he the fourth receiver, the fifth receiver? Is he active? I mean, what are you doing, right? I mean, how much do you pay for that?
Tough conversation. And I think it's a good receiving room if he's your fourth or fifth receiver. Does T.Y. want to be the fourth or fifth? I mean, we don't need to spend time talking about how important he's been to this franchise over the last 10 years, Ring of Honor guy and all that. But you make a good point, and you just named all those playmakers. And the one guy we haven't talked about, Nyheim Hines, who's essentially a receiver. I mean, in a lot of ways, and they've talked
could be
about
their
getting
slot.
The ball. Yeah, and we don't need to go into that, but that's going to be a new thing. They're going to definitely try and get him the ball more. And They got like one of the top three players in all of football taking handoffs in the backfield of Jonathan Taylor. So
yeah,
that's part of the conversation here with T.Y. It has to be. There is one football. And look, I mean, Paris Campbell can play football. I know the argument is he doesn't stay healthy and the Colts cannot bank on him being out there. But if you don't think he can play, go back and watch the Jacksonville tape from week one of 2020. And he's like the best receiver they had that day. And I know they weren't great that day, but he can play. And I think with Matt Ryan, I think there's a high ceiling for Paris Campbell this year, but he's got to go prove it. He's got to go prove it. And until that happens, there's really no point in speculating on what might happen. But that's a tough conversation on the T.Y. Hilton front. That's tough. We did also hear from the owner yesterday, as only Jim Irsay can. We don't need to go into the quarterback stuff, but I was a little intrigued by what he said about Matt Ryan. And look, Jim Irsay, the man lives in hope. He's an optimist. He's the biggest Colts fan there ever was. You guys know this. You follow the team. He drinks in optimism like no one I've ever known. But he thinks Matt Ryan could be a three-year thing. He mentioned four. The longer the interview went, the longer Matt Ryan's playing. Do you think that's possible? Do you think Matt Ryan is a quarterback here for 3 years?
I mean, you got to love him. Wait a minute. First of all, you buried the lead here. Okay. So we went into Jim Irsay's office yesterday. I've been there before, but it's not as if it's a regular thing. Okay. It's been quite some time. So Jim Irsay's office is like a sensory experience, first of all. Okay. Right. It's like, think about the most like luxurious hotel you've ever been in. And multiply it like times 10, right?
The desk is like 10 feet wide.
it would not fit in my living room, okay? And then he used to have sort of his rock and roll memorabilia encased in the wall, or some of it, because there's lots of it. Some of it encased in the wall behind his desk.
One of those guitars is worth seven times my house.
Yeah, he had a Jimi Hendrix guitar. In a glass case in built into the wall behind his desk. That was like literally the backdrop. So his Zoom calls would be amazing, except he's got the traveling exhibit now. So all that stuff's getting sent around the country and all that, his memorabilia. So instead he just replaced it with another display. Oh, the Lombardi trophy and helmets of Peyton Manning, some guy named Johnny Unitas, and I don't know, some kid who used to wear number 12 here. Apparently he was really good, but didn't play very long. So pretty cool, right? Pretty cool. And then the other thing, I'm way, way off the subject now, but you got to hear this. So Jim Irsay's got this little cute fluffy dog. This dog loves him some Zach, okay?
So I told my wife, like, is there a dog that has a better life in the world? Like, I can't imagine like how good this dog's life is.
The dog sat in on the interview with us, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was so comfortable. Let's be honest. There's photographic evidence of this, but I'm not going to tweet it. But
he sat right in my lap. Never met him before. Never met this little
curled
guy
right
before.
Up in Zach's lap. I don't know what to make of that, but really interesting.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Okay, Matt Ryan. Sorry.
There we go. There's a tangent.
So, Matt Ryan, yeah, there's nobody that loves hope more than Jamercy. If Jamercy were a salesman, he would beat all of his colleagues every year. You know what I mean? He'd be that guy
his
who was like the
was
sales
a hell award. Of a salesman.
Yeah, he was.
He was not a great owner, but he was a hell of a salesman. And put his own father out of business.
That's all he had to sell was hope because they were any good. but listen, if he were a salesman, he'd be that guy who like wins like the trip every year from the company for top sales award. That'd be Jamercy. Because you want to believe, man. When you walk out of there, you want to believe. And look, he started out saying, you know, well, you know, I think, you know, we've got him under contract for 2 years, but you know, I really think this probably is going to be three. And then 10 minutes later, it was four. Had we stayed longer, Matt Ryan would probably be playing to 47 years old.
Yeah.
But I do think there's something to take away from that. Two things. Number one, they are really putting a lot of their hope in Matt Ryan. Maybe too much even, right? You could argue. But they're putting a lot of their hope in that, and I was going to get to that argument, that are they putting too much hope in Matt Ryan? Not that I don't like him, but just have they done enough elsewhere, right? That's one argument. The other thing to take away from that is that it must be a conversation of some kind in the building that this guy has the ability to play longer. Maybe this is really going to be like a real second act for him, and this won't be a 2 year thing. You know, maybe this is Peyton in Denver somewhat, right?
Yeah,
I mean, not
that's at 4 years.
He's not the same player, but you know, maybe in terms of how long the stint could be, maybe it's similar. I don't know. You have to wonder if that conversation hasn't happened, if not with Matt Ryan, then with the Colts themselves. So I want to spin that to maybe the question I just posed. How much of their optimism do you think hinges on Matt Ryan? And if so, is it too much?
It is hard to explain how thrilled they are to have this guy. Like, he's not going to come in and win the MVP, but it's very clear to me in the words of Frank Reich, Chris Ballard, Jamercy, and other people I've talked to in the building that they have turned the page and they are in a better spot than they were 12 months ago.
Boy,
we don't need to get
ever
into all of that, but just listen to this quote from Jamercy. There's no way I can sit here and explain to you unless you looked into Chris Ballard and Frank Reich's eyes the difference in the building right now with Matt Ryan. His professionalism, his stature. I mean, they have really bought into this guy. And I watched Matt Ryan on the McAfee show the other day, and he's just a real dude. Like, he's just he's just going to fit in perfectly. And I know that sounds like Colts PR, but if you watch him, you just get it. Like, you get why Atlanta loves this guy. He's just real, and he's going to come in, and that transition is going to be really easy because he's a pro. He's just going to come in. I think the teammates are going to love him, and I think he's going to help this offense in a lot of ways. And, you know, Matt Ryan wants to keep playing. It really seems like he's been reinvigorated here since he changed over, and I think things probably got stagnant in Atlanta, and it was probably hard for him to find the hope of we're going to be competing in the playoffs and making a run at it. Like, they weren't going to do that. The roster's terrible. And he comes here and he's got Jonathan Taylor and Pittman, and they added some pieces in the draft, and he's got Frank Reich. And I think that really matters. And, you know, let's do 2 years and then let's see how he goes. He's 36, going to turn 37 at the start of next season. But, you know, they're buying into this. And I think the other element of that is they didn't draft a quarterback this year. They thought about it. They talked about it. They didn't do that. I think Matt Ryan gives them a breather. It doesn't make them expedite that process that we've been talking about for 3 years now. They don't have to go reach for somebody. I think that matters a lot here. And they're going to have to find a long-term successor at some point. But I think Jim Irsay is very, very thankful that Matt Ryan is his quarterback and Carson Wentz is not. I think that's been pretty clear. We've reported on that. But, damn, they got lucky, because when they moved on from Carson, as Jim Irsay said yesterday, there was no answer out there that they really liked.
Right. No question. The only person I think in that building who loves Matt Ryan more than Jim Irsay is, well, I guess it's, let me rephrase that. It's comparable. The way he loves Matt Ryan is comparable to the way Drake loves you. That's just my question. Drake being the dog. Anyway, I would say this. I think that with Matt Ryan, they have credibility that they did not have. They have not had, I think, since the retirement of Andrew Luck. And I know maybe that sounds like a slight at Philip Rivers, but it's not. What I'm doing is acknowledging the fact that there were a lot of doubts about Philip Rivers coming into 2020. Now, I thought that he availed himself, or I should say, he acquitted himself, I should say, pretty nicely that year. But look, were there limitations? Sure. There were limitations. Yeah. But I think this is a different level of confidence in the quarterback. Is it misplaced? Is there too much confidence? Have they done enough elsewhere? That is a fair question. I would say I think that the difference in quarterback play could be such that that it doesn't matter as much what they've done elsewhere. I think they could get such a lift from the quarterback play. It could be so much different to the extent that the other areas matter a little less. That doesn't mean they don't matter. I'm saying they matter less.
Yeah. You get so much better in efficiency that makes the gap up, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to make this a Carson Wentz podcast, but look, the fact of the matter is, I mean, just look at the games. Look at what happened at the end of last season. They were afraid to throw the football. Okay. I mean, like, there's really nothing else to say. There's literally nothing else to say. They are going to be able to throw the football in very crucial situations this year and have a quarterback who they trust can throw it accurately. I mean, what more do you have to say? You know, they didn't have that last year. They have that now. Like, that should change everything. You know, can they go compete with Kansas City? Can they go to Vegas and Denver and win, places like that? I mean, maybe. I actually think I like their chances. I mean, I'm not saying I'm picking them. But look, I think if things go well, they have a defense that can compete. They have a quarterback who can make plays. I think they got a shot to win every game. They got a shot in every game this year.
The one thing we haven't touched on is the AFC South, and that changed this weekend. It did.
Fair.
The Titans shipped away their best player, one of their best players in A.J. Brown. And as you noted, probably the player that's given the Colts the most trouble over the last couple of years in the AFC South. And that includes Derrick Henry, who's had some good games against the Colts, but
they're not afraid of Derrick Henry. They are not afraid of Derrick Henry.
A.J. Brown tore them up. I mean, he tore up Rocky Sin. And him going to Philly matters a lot in this division. I think with the addition of Matt Ryan, the subtraction of A.J. Brown in Tennessee, are the Colts the favorites in the AFC South?
I think it's an argument. There is an argument to be made. I mean, look, the Titans are the two-time defending champions in the division. That matters a lot, and I get to give them their due. But I am very skeptical about the Titans. I'm very skeptical between what I saw in the playoffs and then this recent move from a couple of nights ago. That has me feeling very skeptical about the Titans. And frankly, I'm skeptical about their quarterback. And I think everybody's been skeptical about him. I would say
you were there in Tennessee that day. Yeah, yeah. Bad interception.
Look, do the Colts arguably have the best quarterback situation in the division?
Man,
I don't know.
What a crazy thought.
That's not like a ridiculous question. No,
probably Trevor Lawrence. Well,
situation is the wrong word, right? I think that's the wrong word.
It's hard to say Jacksonville has the best situation for anything. Like, literally, it's just hard to.
Well, he's 24, right? So that helps. But so in the long term, that's a better situation maybe. But I think when you talk about right now, I mean, which quarterback would you rather have right now if you had to go win a game, a single game? Do you pick Matt Ryan over everybody else? Yeah. Maybe.
Look, Titans are tough, man. Vrabel's really good. They're not really going away. Well coached. He gets the most out of them. They're a pain to play against up front, especially. But Brown matters. That's going to be fun to watch. And the Colts, you got to go do it. Like, you got to stop talking about winning the division and going to late January playoff runs. You got to go do it.
And that's why I hesitated.
I feel like they have the pieces to do it. Yeah,
that's why I hesitated. Right? Like, you know, when you ask me if they're the favorite, just come up short. Right. When you ask me, are they the favorite? That's why I hesitate. Because it's like, hey, man, it's been a long time. Okay. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
And show me, don't tell me. And I get that all you can do in May is talk. I understand that. But it's May 1st today. But at the same time, that's where they are. Okay. I like their team, but show me, don't tell me. So we'll see. It's up to them. Man. I went through this in my head the other day, and I probably need to actually do it on paper, but this team is going to look very different in 2022. There are some key changes, and it just continued with this draft. I got to tell you, I mean, that's what keeps this fun, because the NFL is ever changing. You know, look at this team from 2 or 3 years ago to now. You know, even though they have some core players, their best players, right? They have remained the same, but there has been just rampant change up and down this roster, and that's going to continue. You know, and I think we're going to learn more about them here in the coming weeks and months. But it's been interesting, and this has been one hell of a past 4 months, hasn't it? Unbelievable, all the stuff.
It's crazy. Happened. I mean, to put a cap on it, you know, we sat on the same seats that Chris Ballard and Frank Reich sat in 4 months ago on a Sunday night in January. After that game in Jacksonville, while you and I were drinking to the disaster that we had just witnessed, and the fact that we were not covering any playoff games for the Colts, you know, they were getting an ass chewing, as Chris Ballard would later say it. I think it's remarkable, and I'm saying this objectively, where they were at that point and where they are now. It's remarkable. If you just look at it objectively, like, they were going to move on from Carson and they were going to cut him if they had to. Not only did they do that, they picked up an extra pick. They saved some money. They got Washington to take all the salary. We don't need to go into this at length, but they added Ngakoue. They added Matt Ryan. They added Stephon Gilmore. They added a receiver in the draft who can play right away. This has been a good 4 months for the Colts. Chris Ballard, as Jim Irsay said yesterday, he's part of the sea. Now, Jim Irsay's selling. He's selling hope.
Selling so hard.
I am very surprised at how well they have managed the last 4 months. That is not lost on me. The one move we haven't probably talked enough about is Ngakoue, who's just going to come in and sack people. He's just going to come in and sack the quarterback. That's one thing they missed last year, and they still turned the ball over 33 times. So you're right. It's going to be a different team this year. They got better at the really important positions, but you got to go earn it. And they haven't won the division in 7 or 8 years, and they haven't won an opener since, like, the beginning of time. So it's going to be fun, but – Jim Irsay is buying into the Colts in 2022.
Yep. All I can say is, the only thing I can add to that is, long live Ron Rivera. God bless him.
Right.
Man. Anyway, it's been fun and exhausting and just mind-blowing. It's been a lot of things the last few months. But, you know, I think this is why we do the job, because – the NFL just is the gift that keeps on giving, and, you know, we're along for the ride, you know, whether we like it or not. We're hanging on for dear life like the rest of you, just trying to react to the development. So it's been fun. It's been some long hours and lots to deal with, but I can't complain. It's been fun. I hope things are going to slow down, but we're going to have more to cover here in the coming weeks and months. Hopefully. We haven't gotten to this point yet, but hopefully we get our little behind the scenes session in the draft room, because I think that usually gives us a whole lot of podcast material. So
And we can have some guests on. We've got some ideas, so stay tuned. Some really good guests in the next couple of weeks and months.
Yeah. Also, put this on your calendar, rookie camp in 2 weeks. So we'll actually get to see those guys on the field, and we'll get some access to that. So that should be also interesting to watch. So anyway, that's it for us. I'm Stephen Holder with Zach Kiefer. The draft is in the books. Thanks for coming along for the ride. We'll still do podcasts periodically. We may pull back a little, but just stick with us, and you'll see it in your podcast feed when it pops up. All right, thanks, guys. This is 1%.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.